I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. Today, I'm joined by two of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. We've got associate editor Laura and writer Eve. This week, we're going to be talking about an exclusive interview that one of the Week Junior readers recently did with boxer Anthony Joshua. We've got a climate change victory for women in Sweden and a mission to help protect voles. We're also going to be having a big debate on whether roads should be closed for children to play on. So, speaking of playing outdoors, I want to know where your favourite place to play was when you were little. Mine, I've kind of got two guys. One was, there was a little play area around the back of my house on our estate. But the second, if it was a really, really good time, I used to go to Cadbury World quite a lot, and they had an outdoor play area. Like, they had like a big climbing frame decorated with different pictures of chocolate bars. And oh, it was just everything I needed from a play area. So that probably would be my favourite place. Eve, how about you?
That's quite a flex, Cadbury World as your favourite play area. but mine would probably be, my friend Tilly used to live on a cul-de-sac, so very few cars came down there. So whenever it snowed, we used to go and play out in the snow on her road because the cars wouldn't come and ruin it and make it all slushy. And it was just a great place to, you know, have snowball fights, play different, make snow angels, and then go back into Tilly's house for a hot chocolate and to watch a Christmas film. So yeah.
Sounds ideal. Oh my goodness. I might come around and pause myself. Laura, how about you?
Oh, sounds like a Christmas film. Yeah. My favourite places usually involve plants. So at school, there were these bushes that we used to play in that had sort of tunnels through them, and you could kind of move around undercover, which was quite cool. But the place I remember most was an apple tree in my garden. So this is kind of a little bit sad, I suppose. I used to play a lot on my own because I didn't have any brothers or sisters, although actually it's not sad because I had a really good time. And this apple tree was really easy to climb. It had this big fat, flat branch that I could sort of lie on. And I used to pretend that I was this wild person living off nature. And I still remember I used to call it Wild Game, which makes me laugh now because it kind of sounds like a film or a computer game. Yeah, and then that was me. I was just up in a tree pretending I was wild. Of course, in reality, I would have been rubbish living wild, and I was just waiting for my mum to call me in for tea. But yeah.
Wild Game, I love it. Oh my goodness, yes. I'm also an only child, and I do remember weirdly hiding in many a tree, so you've brought that memory back to me there, Laura. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Wow, I'm gonna think that is a yew tree. Anyway, let's talk about the cover of this week's issue. Eve, what is going on this week? It's a big one.
Yes, this is a very exciting cover this week, and we've had to keep this under wraps until now. So on the front cover, we have a picture of champion boxer Anthony Joshua and one of our readers, 9-year-old Josie, who took him on with her very own exclusive interview. So a couple of weeks ago, I went with Josie to the gym where Anthony Joshua trains, and she had a whole list of questions to ask him that she'd prepared and she'd been practicing, ranging from what his favourite food is to what he would do if he saw someone getting bullied. And we also asked him what he has for breakfast. It was a very long list. He said, breakfast includes potatoes, yams, chicken, spinach, eggs, nuts, mangoes, avocado, and a cup of ginger tea. Ugh. I thought he was going to stop talking, and he kept listing, and I was thinking, wow, all I have is a piece of toast this morning. So very impressive from Anthony Joshua. And you can read Josie's exclusive interview in the magazine on page 9, but here's a few snippets of their interview as well.
Did you enjoy school, and did you have a favourite teacher?
I did enjoy school because I had loads of friends at school, and remember, we do so many different classes like maths, history, English, chemistry. And my favourite teacher was probably my PE teacher. What's your favourite subject at school?
Probably science.
Do you like science? Oh, nice, nice. And is that your favourite teacher as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. So yeah, my favourite subject at school was probably PE, and my favourite teacher was a PE teacher as well.
If you have one magic wish, what would you do?
If I had one magic wish, I would want to be able to fly to the universe. So imagine flying, and then you can leave this planet and you can go into the universe and see all the stars, see all the other planets. That would be my magic power.
What's your biggest fear?
My biggest fear? I don't have a biggest fear because I have a very positive mind and everything's fun. Every day's a blessing, so I have no fear. Do you have any fears?
Spiders.
Oh, yeah. But isn't it interesting that a spider's probably this big and you're this big and you're scared of this little spider? Well, could you think that it can crawl up your sleeve and kind of get into your ear? Yeah, don't worry. Don't worry about no spiders.
So thanks so much to Josie and her brilliant interviewing skills, really putting mine to shame, I have to say, and to Anthony Joshua for answering her very tough questions.
I absolutely love this. Well done, Josie. And also, I love, if you look at the cover of the magazine this week, Anthony Joshua is so tall, he's almost broken the title of the magazine. He is pushing up where it says Making Sense of the World. It's kind of like it's on a bit of an edge because it just can't handle him, which I absolutely love. So yeah, brilliant interview. Well done, Josie. Now it's time for Real or Rubbish. This is the bit of the show where one of the team tries to trick me with a story. I have to guess whether it's true or false. Come on, Laura, what do you have for me? I need to beat you this week because I've got a bit of a losing streak behind me.
Oh, I'm quite nervous because I haven't done this for a while. Okay, here we go. So this issue, I'm going to tell you about a group of volunteers who have been knitting furiously to create a woolly tank. And when I say a tank, I mean a battle tank of the kind that's taken to war, although you wouldn't take this one to war. So this was created by the Ripon Community Poppy Project. And they actually used a wooden frame and they knitted around it. I guess if they hadn't have done that, you wouldn't have been able to see what it was. It would have just been just a pile of wool. And they used thousands of wool to knit around it and create a Churchill tank, which measures 7.3 metres long, 2.7 metres wide and 2.1 metres tall. The Woolly Wonder will soon be going on display in the North Yorkshire town, but reports have not confirmed if it could be used in battle. So is this real or am I just spinning you a yarn?
Well, thank you for that, Laura. Right.
Oh, you were thinking that the whole way through, weren't you?
Yeah. Okay, so I need to clarify, it isn't like a small baby tiny tank. It was a big tank we're talking that will go on display somewhere.
It's absolutely huge, yeah. It's tank sized. It's massive.
And it was on a wooden structure. So I guess in my head, if this is real, it's a bit like, you know, you put a tea cozy over a teapot. This is a woolen tank over a wooden structure.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, obviously they had to knit around something because otherwise, like I said, it just would have been a big pile of wool and you wouldn't have been able to tell what it was.
And
they took thousands of balls of wool to make this.
Does it have any detail? Like, does it have any windows? Does it have different colours? Does it have the little funnel nose thing that, I mean, I'm sure there is a better.
It does. Yeah, it's got the kind of the bit on the top where you sort of, you would sit in with the kind of the gun coming out.
And... I just really want this to be real, but I haven't, you know, sometimes you think I could be, you know, people do things to celebrate or commemorate, especially World War One, World War Two. And this is a really good community idea, I guess. But where did all the wool come from? Who paid for the wool? Do we know?
So I imagine that this community group had quite a lot of wool at their disposal anyway. But yeah, it did take thousands of balls of wool to make it. And I think they were donated some of the timber. So maybe they were also donated some of the wool as well. Yeah, thousands of balls of wool it took.
And I'm assuming the tank doesn't move, like it's not going to kind of like roll forward. It's going to be stuck down with glue.
I don't think it's going anywhere, no. But I mean, it has got woolly wheels, but I don't think that it would get very far, put it that way.
I'm just thinking, is it outside or inside? Because if it's outside and it rains, that is a very fluffy tank we've got on our hands there, right?
That's true, yes, although I suppose it would just be washed, wouldn't it? Just get a nice wash.
Oh, yeah, you've got an answer for everything, Laura. Oh, man. Okay, I have no idea about that one. So while I think about that, let's talk about our book of the week, which is The Island at the Edge of Night by Lucy Strange. It's about Faye, who is sent away to a sinister boarding school on a lonely island. As she starts to explore the island, she discovers some strange secrets, a ghostly boy, some hidden tunnels, and shadowy plots. So let's have a message here from the author, Lucy Strange.
Hello. Hello to you, listeners of the Week Junior Show. My name is Lucy Strange, and I am the author of The Island at the Edge of Night, which has been selected as Book of the Week in the current issue of the magazine. Woohoo! Now, I am here to answer a very important question. What was my favourite children's book growing up? And my answer is The Secret Garden by Frances Hodgson Burnett. And I had this on audiobook and I used to listen to it every night as I fell asleep. And I've got a theory that the words of that beautiful book kind of seeped into my bones, seeped into my unconscious brain as I slept, because I think you can see the influences of that classic story in the books that I write now. If you could cut my books open like a cake, you might be able to see some of those ingredients in there, the gothic setting and the family secrets and friendship and nature and hope. All of those things are there in my stories, and perhaps most of all in my most recent book, The Island at the Edge of Night.
Yet another book I haven't read, but I have seen the film of, so I think that kind of counts. Right, we also love hearing messages from our readers and listeners as well. Laura, what caught your eye this week?
Oh, well, this is a great photo that Alicia sent in of her holding up an amazing strawberry. And I actually had strawberries for breakfast this morning, but I didn't have one like this. She said, my mum was searching for a delicious strawberry to give me to eat, and then she found this, not one, but three in one strawberry. And she's holding up this strawberry that kind of, yeah, it looks like a sort of, yeah, three strawberries joined into one. And she said, after we took this photo, I ate it. I found the strawberry very yummy. I love strawberries.
I love strawberries as well, Alicia. And I've got to say, I don't think I would have been able to contain myself. I don't think I'd have taken a picture. I would have eaten it immediately as soon as I saw it. So I'm impressed. Eve, how about you? What did you find this week?
So we had a message from 7-year-old Callum who said, I created a book called Dino and Worm versus the Bone Breaking Bubbles, which I think sounds like a bestseller already. Mm. He said, I wrote a story and drew pictures. The Week Junior is great and I really want to publish my book one day. And I hope you publish your book one day too, Callum, because I'd really love to read that.
It looks
me too.
Awesome.
Me too. I want to know how the bubbles break bones. That's really cool.
Yeah. Did you guys ever write books when you were kids? Laura, did you?
I did write quite a lot of books, yes, but they sort of resembled the last Enid Blyton or other book that I just read. I don't think they were particularly imaginative, certainly not as imaginative as Callum's.
Like The Fabulous Five instead of The Famous Five.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Eve, did you ever write your own book?
I did actually. I wrote one about a seagull who was campaigning for, because there's always posters up saying don't feed the seagulls by the seaside. And so I wrote a book about a seagull that campaigned for people to feed the seagulls instead. and yeah, it's buried away somewhere under my bed at my parents' house. So maybe I should whip it out and publish it.
Oh my goodness. Two bestsellers there. I wrote... let's call it a slim volume of poetry. When I was a kid, I decided I was going to be a poet, and I know it. And it didn't hit the bestseller books. Let's put it like that. So we do love receiving your news and your comments. Tell us what you've been up to recently. Send us an email. Go to hello@theweekjunior.co.uk, or you can leave us a voice note. Go to funkidslive.com/theweekjunior. Just look for that big red button, grab a grown-up, and then record your voice. Now let's dive back into this issue of The Week Junior and talk about some of the top stories from the week. Eve, what story is your pick?
So I love this story because it's a really amazing victory for climate change that happened last week. So a group of 2,400 women from Switzerland, who were mostly in their 70s, recently took their government to court because they said that its weak policies on climate change were putting their health at risk. And so an international court called the European Court of Human Rights agreed with the women. And this was the court's first ever climate case victory. And the climate change activist Greta Thunberg joined the women as they celebrated their victory. And experts think this is an important decision for the future because it makes it clear that countries have a responsibility to protect their people from the effects of climate change. And I remember when I saw this story in the news, I was just really excited. It looked like an amazing victory. And I hope that similar things happen in future.
Yeah, big deal. Massive news there. Thank you, Eve. Laura, how about you?
So, yeah, my favourite story this week was about a charity that is looking for volunteers. So I guess you could say it's a citizen science story. So citizen science is when basically the community gets involved in collecting data for scientists. And the People's Trust for Endangered Species, which is a wildlife charity, is looking for water vole watchers. So water voles are small little rat-like creatures In fact, if you've ever read Wind in the Willows, the character Ratty is not a rat, he's a water vole. They do look quite different to rats, though. They've got much more rounded faces and they're very, very cute. But unfortunately, they're quite a rare sight nowadays. They're endangered in the UK and their numbers have been affected by habitat loss and also an invasive species called the American mink, which was accidentally introduced. But between now and the 15th of June, the People's Trust for Endangered Species wants people to head to their nearest stream, river or canal, always with an adult, of course, to search for water voles and record for evidence of them. So you can look for the little burrows that they make. And I love this. Apparently, one of the telltale signs of a water vole is the plop noise that they make when they dive into the water, which is really cute. You're probably more likely to hear a plop than to see a vole, but nevertheless, it's very exciting. And basically, the data will be used to help the charity know where water voles are doing well and where they're not doing so well. So if you want to take part, then look up the People's Trust for Endangered Species on the internet and see how you can get involved.
Oh, lovely. And listen out for the plops as well, presumably. Excellent. Now it's time for this week's big debate. We are talking about closing roads. Now here's what you've got to know. Only one in four children play regularly on their street, and many parents think it's too dangerous, mostly because of the cars. In some parts of the UK, there are not enough parks or outdoor spaces for children. That's according to research from 2022. And many studies show that playing in the open air is vital to young people's mental and physical well-being. Playing Out is a national organisation that campaigns for residential roads to be closed to traffic sometimes. Since 2022, it has led over 1,500 UK streets to be regularly closed to traffic so children can play outside of their homes. So the question for this week's big debate is, should roads be closed for play? Here's how it works. Each person has just 60 seconds to make their case. And of course, first up, we've got Eve arguing in favour of closing roads for play. I'm going to get my clock up here. Eve, reset it to 00000. And whenever you're ready, take it away.
Okay, so firstly, outdoor activities are very, very important for physical well-being, and it can reduce anxiety levels, bad moods, and it means that children are also spending less time on their devices. So, but not everyone has a garden or access to a nearby park, so closing roads for play is a great way to give them access to that outdoor space. And also, closing the road to traffic creates a safe space for children to play, so then they don't need as much adult supervision. And then this gives them more independence and freedom to play as they want to, which can help them become much more confident. And it's also a really fun way to get to know your neighbours and build a community with like the people that live around you. I remember when I was younger, being very close with my next door neighbour, Lottie, and we always used to knock for each other to see if the other one was home and play together. And it was just so much fun. And I used to ride my bike up and down my street a lot. And I just think everyone should have the freedom to do that safely.
Oh, well under a minute. Lovely. Thank you, Eve.
Okay.
I was shocked. Nothing to do with you.
Concise.
I love it. Laura, so whenever you fancy, take it away.
Okay. So I think it's a lovely idea, but I think it would cause more trouble than it's worth. And that's because there's already too much traffic. And basically closing some streets would just make it worse for others. So basically under the scheme, you're allowed to close roads as long as they aren't bus routes or main roads. But that doesn't mean they aren't busy roads. So I grew up on a really busy road that wasn't a main road. And if it was closed, it would have caused chaos. Basically, drivers would have to find a different route. They'd have to go elsewhere. And suddenly other places would become busier and people would have to go out of their way, which is just like stressful for everyone. Also, lots of people park their cars on the streets. Not everyone has drives. So where would they park their cars? Their cars might get damaged by people playing, by balls and things. And thirdly, I just think that this isn't the answer. I think children should play in a park or a playground. And if there isn't enough of them available, then we need to create more green spaces for children to play in. You know, perhaps we could open school playing fields at the weekends. There are other things that we can do. Parks are designed for play.
Oh, we squidged you in just in a minute there. Lovely stuff. So, well, I mean, two very compelling arguments, but of course, it's up to the listeners and the readers to decide who is right. So if you've got an opinion on this, go to theweekjunior.co.uk/polls to vote and tell us your thoughts. You can also comment your opinion wherever it is you're listening to this podcast, or record a voice note by hitting the big red button at funkidslive.com/theweekjunior. And in last week's big debate, Kay and Elena discussed whether snakes should be bred for meat to eat. Even saying out loud still makes me a little bit icky, to be honest. Laura, what were the results?
So, unsurprisingly, 86% didn't fancy the idea of eating snake meat. Maybe we should start to think about some other kinds of food.
Eve, what did our listeners have to say?
So we had a few messages. Someone said, I think so, because if cows are bad for the environment and we are trying to eat more bugs, why can't we just eat snakes too? They don't harm the environment and they don't take up much space. Someone else said, on the complete other side, I think it's disgusting. I think no wild animal should be fed to a human. I also think it's cruel because even though, in capital letters, I do not like snakes, everyone and everything deserves a life. I do not think snakes should be bred for meat. And finally, someone else said no, because there are other easier sources of protein, such as insects. Also, breeding snakes is dangerous. They might bite you. And finally, this can lead to snakes being treated badly and becoming endangered.
As usual, lots
good
of
point.
Really,
I wouldn't want to be a snake farmer, would you?
No, really good point.
No, that would be quite scary.
I mean, you can rely on the Week Junior readers and listeners to really give you lots of different ideas there. And that was great. And so, of course, if you have an opinion on this week's debate, just email us, go to theweekjunior.co.uk/polls to vote. Or you can tell us hello at theweekjunior.co.uk. Now, before we go, we've got to reveal that real or rubbish story. Laura, can you remind me what it was, please?
I can. So yeah, it was the Ripon Community Poppy Project, and they knitted a giant tank.
Right. So I have heard a story this week about a knitter, but not this story.
Okay. No.
Well, I know the one you mean, the woman who made Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's so cool.
Yeah. So I've heard that story.
Not a life-size Buckingham Palace, though, surely.
No, a miniature one.
Yeah, that would take a little more than 1,000 ball of wool. So I know it's possible to knit structures and sculptures. And I think this is the kind of thing people would do. I'm going to say the story this week is real, and I genuinely am basing that on nothing but a gut instinct. I'm going to say the story is true, is real. Should we do a little drum roll?
It is. It's real.
Yes!
You're absolutely right, which is why I didn't reveal this in the first bit. Yeah, it was a community project, and it was done to mark 80 years since D-Day, which is actually the 6th of June 1944, and so it's coming up, and obviously it's a very important event during the Second World War, so that was why they knitted this tank, which is really impressive.
I wondered whether it was a misdirect and it was actually going to be the lady who knitted a lot of landmarks, and I couldn't figure out whether you'd kind of try to fool me, but well, lovely. I might try and get along and see a woolen tank. That is it for this week's episode of the Week Junior Show. Big thank you to Laura and Eve. Of course, don't forget to rate, review and subscribe, or follow us wherever it is you get your podcast from. And tune into next week's show, where we'll be joined by some more guests from the team for some stories, debates and chat. See you then. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, which is made by the same people that make The Week Junior magazine. You can get 6 free issues of The Week Junior or 3 issues of The Week Junior Science and Nature for £5 by heading to theweekjunior.co.uk/podcast offer.